I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Comté Cheese Association. Comté, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at comté-usa.com. That's comté-usa.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kara Warren, and today we're going to take a look at a classic Swiss cheese, one that's on many cheese counters and many cheesemongers, I believe, know it and love it. Today we're going to look at the Swiss cheese Tête de Moine. It was anointed AOP designation status in 2001, so 20 years ago, actually. Pretty long time ago, and it's considered to be a pillar of the Swiss cheese world. On today to discuss the history of Tête de Moine, I have Martin Sigenthaler. He is the gérant or manager of the Tête de Moine DOP Association. He's also a Swiss cheesemaker, food engineer, and has a master's in business administration, so he's well-rounded, which I love. And then we also have Randall Feltz, an ACS CCP cheesemonger and owner of Beautiful Rhine, located in Chicago. Martin, Randall, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. I should have taken a deeper breath before I started all of that, because you guys are awesome. You have a lot of cheese experience. We're here on the show today to discuss Tête de Moine, which, again, is a classic Swiss cheese. I'd like to start with Martin. What is your first experience with Tête de Moine? And curious, did you have it as a child?
Oh, my first experience with Tête de Moine was a few years ago, so I'm over 20 years in the beast cheese business. So I know the Tête de Moine since very long, and I appreciate it every time I can use it. And since the last 4 months that I'm now the gérant, the head of the Tête de Moine, I'm appreciated like every day, because it's really a speciality and a unique speciality which we have here in Swiss.
Yeah. So, okay. So you got into it a few years ago. Randall, I'm curious, as a cheesemonger's perspective, what was your first experience with Tête de Moine?
You know, it's funny. It's a memorable cheese. So my first experience was actually kind of before I was even a cheesemonger. I was a line cook and pastry chef got married, and we went on our honeymoon to Northern California, and we were having dinner at a really great restaurant that's since closed called Cyrus, that had this old school cheese cart service. And they kind of wheeled it up to the table. And just by sheer coincidence, the server happened to know the restaurant I worked in Birmingham. He'd worked there before, so he really did it up with this cheese cart. And he came out and he was like, "Oh, we have this really cool cheese here with this tool. I'll have to show it to you." And so he goes in the back and brings out a new wheel of Tête de Moine and the Girolle and everything. And I remember that even pre getting into being a cheesemonger, it was at that time where I was like, do I want to be a cook or do I want to be a cheesemonger? And, you know, between that and Red Hawk on the beach, that kind of sold it for being a cheesemonger.
Oh, wow. So, okay. And well, we'll get to Girolle and rosettes later in the episode, but I'm excited that, so yours was a restaurant experience, actually. That's very, very cool. I think then, since we're looking at history, I'd like to go back to Martin. And Martin, if you could give us a brief history of Tête de Moine, because I know it's a very old cheese. So what's the best way we can talk about the history of Tête de Moine?
No, the history of Tête de Moine is very old. The first history we've seen, it's about 800 years ago. It's in the Abbey in Bellelay. That's a very small village in Switzerland, which they invited the Tête de Moine. And there was really the milk producer, produce also cheese, and they give it to the monks. And finally, the monks eat it, especially for Christmas. And one special episode is really that one monk was very hungry during the night, And then to not show that he was eating the cheese, he cut the datamo in the middle and started to cut a little bit with his knife in the middle. So that was the start of the history of datamo. And since then, it was really an evolution. And with the invitation of the Girol 40 years ago, that was really the start, the kickoff, when also the export getting more involved. So that really 40 years ago, then it's getting bigger and bigger, the history of the datamo. Now we are even in the US market, so it's very interesting also to discover and to be presented here to show also for the cheesemongers the nice products we produce here in Switzerland.
Yeah, I'm curious, the name Tête de Moine, which translates to monk's head, how did that happen?
Yeah, that's the monks often have the shape of hair, so that's the name where it comes. They cut the special cut in the middle, there's no hair. So that was the approach to the monk's head. And the name is not been changed the last 800 years. And still on our labels and packagings, there are normally three monks. And in the middle is the datamo, so that's the part of the history, and it's really an old and long history, and very long and traditionally. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so Randall, when you're in the cheese shop and you're selling Tête de Moine, what are you thinking as you explain this cheese? Because you tell everyone, do you mention the monk's head title at all? Or
Absolutely. Yeah, so when I'm selling this cheese, we sell a lot of cheese boards. We're kind of half restaurant, half cheese shop. And so we're always putting it on the boards for the visual impact and kind of the fun. People will usually ask, is that cheese? What is this? And so it's fun to get to tell a story and to dip into the rich history of cheese using kind of a good visual impact.
Right. And so actually, Martin, now I want to go back to with the AOP and the PDO standards. Is that helpful for Tête de Moine to have those distinctions?
Yeah, that's very important for us. It's a very strong protection in Europe to defend it. And if you have success, you know it, you've been copied along. And now we have also cases in Spain and in France. They try, but we have a very strong protection here in Europe. And it's not only the DOP is protected, it's also the shape of the rosettes. The three-dimensional are protected. So for us, it's a very strong, and it helps that it's really, sometimes it's also difficult because the restriction to produce milk and to do cheese is very definite, not so easy to do that, but it helps us very much. And it's also helped us to keep the story high and the quality to check that.
Yeah. And you mentioned the shape. How or why is it that shape? Because it's a very uncommon cheese shape. And the fact that it's a semi-firm cow's milk cheese, it just seems like kind of odd, but also useful. I mean, tell me, why is it the shape that it is?
I was not there when the cheese was invited.
Right.
Very long time ago, it was the shape was a little bit big. It's closer to 2 kilos. And now the cheeses are a little bit smaller, so 1 kilo. And I think it's also with the shape of the rosette, so it's easier if you have smaller wheels like to have. And the shape is really getting, before 40 years ago, you start to cut the shapes with a knife, and then 40 years ago the Girol was invited, and I think 10 years ago the Rosomats was invited, so it's getting easier and easier. But 40 years ago it was very difficult to make a hole in the cheese and to start turning the cheese, but for the production, for the increase and for the quality, for the taste of the roast, that you can make really fine flours. So that the smell, it's very thin, and the thinner you get, you the more taste you get also on your tongue. Yeah,
and that's for the rosettes, which I wanted to go into because Randall has even had has been able to use a Rosamat, which to the listeners, just so they know, the Tête de Moine wheel is about 1.87 pounds. I looked it up because it's kind of a smaller drum wheel. And then the Rosamat is an electrical automatic device that you put the wheel on, and then it shaves these the cheese into these florets. And I'm curious, I mean, Randall, did you just start using this? I mean, or has this been with the shop since you opened Beautiful Rind?
No, it hasn't been with the shop since we opened. Martin, as many people in the cheese world do, have some common friends, and someone from Chicago had popped in and noticed that we had the cheese and we're doing it by hand, kind of the old-fashioned way, and mentioned the Rosamat. And I could see our cheesemonger, who was at that time doing a wheel or two a day by hands, eyes light up. And I thought that would be a great little bit of theater to have on our cheese case. So we got to talking about it, and we've been doing, we've had the Rosamat for, gosh, I think probably about 8 or 9 months now.
Okay.
At least.
And it's a game changer for you?
Yeah. It's been great. I mean, the cheese has always been a lot of fun for us, and we've had the cheese since day one, but we were using sort of the metal plastic girolles before it, but having the Rosamats made our cheesemongers' lives a lot easier, and also been kind of a good discussion piece. We kind of refer to it as our fajitas-esque dish, in that it gets everyone's attention when someone orders it.
Right. It's like the flambéed like item in the restaurant. You have this beautiful cheese coming out of this, not a girolle, which is the manual version of a Rosamat.
Yeah.
The Rosamat is like, I like to compare it to the Ferrari of cheese devices at this point, because it is so freaking cool. And that's just me being a super curd nerd. But Martin, I'd like to jump back now to the terroir. And I was reading about Tête de Moine's terroir, and the area is titled the Inter-Jurassic. Is that how you would say it? And could you give us more details about what the terroir is like?
Yes, it's a very strict area. It's the Jura and a small part of the Canton Bern. It's also the Jura-Bernois called. And it's a very small area, and each village is defined. And we have only 240 milk producers. It's quite small. Milk producer, traditional milk producer, has to be accredited to produce. And it's really raw milk, no silo. They feed grass in the summer and hay in the winter time. So it's very traditional. It's also mountain cheese. So it's in the sea. It's about 800 meters over sea level. So it's quite a high mountain. We're expecting the next few days snow here. So it's really a rare and a small area which the cheese can produce, and we will also protect it. Yeah.
Wow. And then the cow that is most commonly used, or the local indigenous breed, can you tell us which cows are preferred to make Tête de Moine?
That's quite open. They're very passionate. It was a Sunday just at a fair for prizes for the cows, for the best cow. And it's they have a lot of Holstein and Red Holstein, but also Jersey. So the different cows are open. It's more about the milk quality, which we are very strict, because it's raw milk cheese. And so it's very important that the milk quality is very good, so that you can produce a very high quality cheese at the end as well.
So, and just to be clear, all Tête de Moine is raw milk in the United States?
Yes, all Tête de Moine raw milk. Yeah,
wow.
It's all the same. It's DOP products. All you can find is raw milk cheese. Yeah,
very cool. And then I guess one more production question for you, because I love to hear. It's just having the classic traditional European cheeses and learning about how they're made, I think, gives so much insight to how other cheeses are made, because it's kind of like the grandfather of many more cheeses. This is a washed rind cheese. Am I correct? Or it's brined? Can you give us a little more info about how that's done as well, the production process?
Yeah, it's a smear ripened cheese. It's also semi-hard cheese, if you want, a small cheese. And this is quite high fat content, so that the texture and to make and to shave the rosettes And then it's a schmierrind at the ripening. And it's during 70, 75 days at least that cheese has to be ripened in caves on wood. So that's really, and then we have the first quality check, and normally between 90 and 110 days, the cheese are leaving the caves, and then they're going completely as wheels to the customers, or they have been shaved as rosettes and packed to the customers. It's depending how the what they want. Yeah, and then we have different ages. We have the classic one, and then we have for more specialists, we have other older ages. But the classic is the main cheese. The mild one is the most, the famous cheese of the Etmar we sold. Yeah.
And you said, how long is that age for? You said 90 to 100 days, but it's longer than that, right? It's more like 6 months or a year?
Yeah, the oldest is 6 months. We have a reserve, which is about 4 months. And the oldest is 6 months, so that's the black label if you want. So that's the oldest, but it's a very small quantities, but it's really, you're getting more taste and more flavor, and the structure of the rosette's a little bit crunchy, but it's very still, you get more taste on it, yeah.
Excellent. Okay, guys. Well, I want to take a quick break. Listeners, you're listening to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network, and we'll be right back.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Conte Cheese Association. Conte Cheese Association represents the Conte PDO, Conte Protected Designation of Origin, in the USA. Conte is a raw milk, cooked, pressed cheese from the Jura Mountains of France. There, every day, 2,500 family farms deliver milk to over 150 local cheesemaking facilities, or fruitiers. This milk must be transformed into Conte within 24 hours of milking to preserve the lactic microflora in the milk, ensuring the cheese's aromatic potential. About 105 gallons of milk are required to craft a single wheel of Conte. Conte takes time to acquire its flavors in the affinage cellars. After 8 months of aging by dedicated affineur on average, each wheel of Conte is graded and shipped to market. No wheel of Conte is the same. Its flavors speak to the pastures where the cows grazed, the season in which it was made, the particular craftsmanship of the cheesemaker, and the time spent in the aging cellar. Therefore, every wheel of Conte is unique. Learn more about Conte, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at conte-usa.com. That's conte-usa.com.
All right. Welcome back, everyone, to Cutting the Curd. I'm your host, Kara Warren, and today I have on the show Randall and Martin. We are talking about Tête de Moine and Beautiful Rind, the cheese shop in Chicago. And I'd like to kind of switch over to Randall and hear about his lovely pairing, because I read through it, and you are a master at doing pairings. I like what I saw. Can you tell the listeners about your pairing?
Oh, sure. So in our shop, with each cheese that we have on our menu, we do a different kind of pairing in-house. And right now with the Tête de Moine, we do brandy flambé dates, which are a lot of fun. We've played with a few different pairings, and we always like to do something that kind of skates the savory sweet aspect with Tête de Moine. So we wanted, going into the winter, to get something a little more hearty and substantial.
That's cool. So are you flambéing in front of people? This is funny that flambéing has come up twice in this episode.
Yeah, no, we're not flambéing in front of people. Chicago has a troubled history with fire, so their regulations are somewhat strict when it comes to open flames. We flambé them in the back, and we take them out, have little ramekins that we serve them with, or even when people get delivery or to go, we will
have them in little plastic containers. But we have posted the flambé process on Instagram a couple times to get reaction.
Got you. That's pretty funny, Randall. I like that. Martin, I'm curious, what are some traditional specialties that the tête de moine can be paired to?
Yeah, we have also tête de moine fondue, if you like it. I mean, we are on wellness as raclette and fondue. And we have also a fondue you can eat, you can share. At the moment, we are not on the U.S. market, but it's very typical as well. It's getting cold, it's getting snowy, and then you sit together, you drink a glass of wine, and then to eat some cheese, so that's also kind. And the other thing is to, at the end of a meal, you taste some rosette. It's also very nice at the beginning as an apéro, or at the end of a dish to just have one flower to close the meal.
Excellent. And actually, this reminded me, Martin, when you cut a wheel of tête de moine, how do you prefer to cut it? Do you cut it across horizontally or do you go vertically? Because for this size of wheel, I know people may have different advantages to how they cut it. And I'm curious what you feel is best.
Yeah, we've heard, I've seen pictures now to cut it in the middle. It's difficult to explain, maybe down the middle, so that you have two parts and then you have one side you can shave down. So it's important, and we have also instruction, or you can also ask a cheesemonger how to shave and to cut the piece. So it's in the middle, not as the piece of cheese, that's a little bit specific, because it's really a unique cheese, and you have to cut it in the middle so that the surface is very big. And that's also the picture in the middle. It's white, and outside it's dark. So that's mine of the tête de moine of the monk's head. So that's a little bit the picture of the head of the monks. Looks like the cheese if you open the cheese in the middle.
Oh, that's very cool. Randall, did you know that? How have you been cutting the cheese? I'm curious.
Yeah, so we originally, pre-Rosamat, we would just sort of very lightly cut off the very top layer.
Right.
And then go down that way. One of the advantages to the Rosamat is that it'll actually just shave off the top layer on its own. So we pretty much just put the whole wheel on the machine and shave off the top layer, and then we're good to go.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's good. This is cool. This is very cool. Randall, I wanted to ask you about your educational work at Beautiful Rhine. How are the classes going? You're doing virtual and in-person now, or is it just virtual?
Yeah, no, we're doing sort of a hybrid model. We like to call it before a live studio audience. So we opened a month into the pandemic. We cleared our inspections the day before Chicago shelter in place order went out. So we had this beautiful classroom space that we used as a recording studio for well over a year. So people had really kind of gotten used to doing our classes online and really enjoyed that. And cheese is all about hospitality. So we wanted to keep that experience, but we also had a lot of people that wanted to come in and dine. So fortunately, my lead cheesemonger, Will Collenborn, was a film student and was able to help set us up so that we could have a great online experience happening at the same time we're having a great in-person experience going on.
Oh, wow. That's very cool. And what are you hoping to see this holiday season? Are you excited? I know we're turning a corner, hopefully, on everything. So what are your expectations for this season?
Yeah, well, my expectations are we're feeling good about it. We're hoping we see more kind of small get-togethers earlier on in December. We had a phenomenal Thanksgiving, Christmas, all of those holidays. But, you know, in previous years, I could remember December being a really fun month, the whole month, not just the sort of last 10 days or so. So I think we're going to look look forward to hosting a lot of little private events, little parties, things like that. Our dance card is quickly filling up already.
Oh, I'm sure. And Martin, are you feeling good about the holiday season? Have logistics been figured out on the Swiss side? I hope everything is going well for you guys.
We hope so. Yeah, we're doing our best. We're getting a new record this year. I think we probably will produce the first time over 3,000 tons of Detumar. But we are ready. We have increased the stock for Christmas, and Christmas is very important. The season, Christmas and Easter, are the most famous season for Detumar. And we hope to be ready, and we hope to have shipped enough Detumar to the U.S. market so that you can also enjoy the rosettes and the flowers and to be a part of your Christmas party as well.
Yeah, I agree. We hope all the European cheeses and Swiss cheeses can get over with the way things are going right now. But I have a good feeling everyone's going to do the best they can in the situation that we're living in. I wanted to thank you both for coming on the show today. This was really insightful and awesome to learn about.
Yeah, no, thank you, Karen, and thanks to Martin, and especially a big thanks to his dairy people and cheesemakers. They're doing the hard work. I like to tell cheesemakers, you guys make my job a lot easier. All I have to do is get people to eat cheese. And when it's a beautiful and delicious cheese, makes my job even easier. So thanks to all of them. And thanks for Kara and Heritage Radio for hosting me.
Oh, yeah. No, you're very
thank
welcome.
Thank you very much, too, from Switzerland. It's very important. We do our best all the days in the dairies and the milk producers. But without you as cheesemongers, but you as the journalist as well to inform and to represent our products. So it's very important for us. Thank you very much. A great work you do for us.
Thank you. Thank you guys for the kind words. I also want to give a special shout out to Amy Thompson for helping me coordinate this episode. She's one of the pioneers in our industry, and she's just a great networker of great people. So I want to give a thank you to her for that. And I would also just like to give a shout out to the Rosamat, because you guys have heard us talk about this on the episode. If you're interested in getting a Rosamat, Amy shared with me a link, and we will post it on our episode description, to go to shopjuicernet.com. And I believe you can get a Rosamat there. I also want to give a shout out to some of these Instagram handles so you can learn more about all the cool things we talked about today. Please follow Randall and his shop at Beautiful Rind. If you're looking to learn more about Tête de Moine, you can go to Tête de Moine AOP, which is Tête_de_Moine. It's another underscore AOP. I think you'll find it, though. I'm not sure too many handles are Tête de Moine AOP, so that's a winner. And then you can also follow us at Cutting the Curd, or myself at Kara Warren. And please listen, subscribe to Cutting the Curd via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks, and eat more cheese.
Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
For listening.